If the book of Proverbs is what I described it to be yesterday, the richest single deposit of instruction on the rearing of our children or on raising kids, then surely we should expect that within this book we would get some feel for the breadth of the spectrum of responsibility laid upon us. What are the concerns of the godly father for his son? Well, as we saw yesterday in chapter 1, he highlights what is foundational to all else in verse 7. The fear of the Lord, a term that is verbal shorthand for the essence of all saving religion in the Old Testament. The fear of the Lord is the chief part of knowledge, but the foolish despise wisdom and instruction. And then beginning with verse 8, where he addresses with this earnest, loving, passionate plea his son, "My son, hear the instruction of thy father, forsake not the law of thy mother." What flows out as instruction and law? What flows out from the heart of this father toward his son? Well, we could spend weeks just answering that question, only identifying and then proving it with one or two proof texts, the tremendously broad spectrum of concerns addressed by the father to his son. He begins with explicit warnings regarding the influence of evil companions. Verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice thee, do not consent." Why does he begin there? Because he's conscious of this issue called peer pressure. No new thing under the sun. And he knows that the single most powerful instrument in the hands of the enemy of his son's soul and of his parental endeavors will be peer pressure. To negate all that the father and the mother have sought to impart. Hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother. It is not without reason that the first thing explicitly addressed is this: if sinners entice thee, do not consent to be with them. And throughout the book we find this warning reiterated. He is told not to company with a man given to anger, lest he become like him. There are explicit warnings concerning the influence of evil companions. There are repeated statements concerning the desirability and blessing of attaining true wisdom. Chapter 1, verse 20 and following. This lengthy closing appeal in the opening section of the book where wisdom is seen, crying in the street, she is pleading for a hearing and an acceptance. She entreats, she begs, she warns, she promises, she threatens. And we find that that motif is picked up again and again throughout the book. Chapter 2, 13, 4, 5, all of chapter 8. We find in the third place, the dangers of sexual uncleanness are a recurring theme in the father's entreaty to his son. He picks it up in the opening statements, one of the very purposes for which he has given this instruction in chapter 2 and verse 12, to deliver you from the way of evil, from men that speak perverse things, who forsake the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil, to deliver you from the strange woman, from the foreigner that flatters with her words, who forsakes the friend of her youth. And once he launches into that subject, no longer is it just a sentence. He feels the pressure upon his heart, realizing his son has a peculiar vulnerability in this area, and he presses it upon his conscience. And he does the same in chapter 5, verse 3 and following. Chapter 6, verses 24 and 25. He does it again in chapter 7, verses 5 through 27. All of this repeated, varied warning on the dangers of sexual uncleanness. It is obvious that he had no hang-ups talking to his son, not only about sex in general. He didn't throw a book at him and give him a little biology and physiology. What he did was to warn him the moral dangers of this emerging power, this 401 cubic inch engine of sexual drive that was emerging. And that's before emission controls were put on the engine. And he's saying, son, this tremendous energy that has come to life in you can destroy you. And the world will never lack for those that are willing to be the instruments of your destruction in this very area. He doesn't just occasionally tell him, pat him on the back, send him out with a car and the keys and no curfew, no management of who and where he's going, and say, just be a good boy and don't do anything I wouldn't do. No, that will not do. Even back then, before there was television, where kids can watch people locked up in semi-naked embraces and deep mouth kissing and hard breathing before they're 9 years old. Before the days of pornography, before the days of the modern movie, and all of the things that can act as a sexual stimulus, even before someone has come into puberty, and certainly on the threshold of it. And yet the warnings were explicit and blunt and frank. And God says to you and to me, this is how you are to parent your sons and your daughters. Warn of the dangers of sexual uncleanness. But the flip side is, he instructs concerning the desirability and delight of marriage and of holy sex. Don't always warn your kids about the evils of uncleanness. Speak to them of the purity and nobility and joys of God-honoring, pure sexual activity. This is what he does with his son. In chapter 5, having warned about uncleanness, he says, rejoice in the wife of your youth. Let her breasts satisfy you at all times and be intoxicated. Go astray with her love. He says, my son, God has a marvelous theater in which you may experience all that he intended you should know in sexual delight and intimacy. And that's the walled garden of the total commitment for life to a noble and to a godly woman. And he sets forth not just the negative warnings, but a positive statement of the desirability and delight of marriage and of sanctified sexual activity. He warns again and again of the folly of choosing marriage partners on the basis of face and form. He speaks of a fair woman without discretion as a gold ring in the snout of a pig. You talk about being gross. And there's that fat old sow out there wallowing around in the mud. And she got a beautiful ring of 24 karat gold in her nose. And you say, what in the world is wrong with this pig farmer? How incongruous! A ring of gold in the snout of a pig. That's what some of you guys will end up with if you don't listen to Solomon. And it should be that I could say, if you don't listen to your dad and your mom, if all you're looking for is face and form of body, you're vulnerable to making a tragic mistake. You'll end up with the gold ring. That's her beautiful face and her beautiful form. But what she is in the rest of her is an old sow wallowing in the mud going, that's what you'll get! And who's to warn them? Who's to instruct them? Father and mother. My son, forsake not the instruction of your father and the law of your mother. Let these shape and mold your perspectives concerning sexuality, the dangers, the delights, your choice of a marriage partner. He emphasizes the desirability of a generous disposition and an open hand. He starts right in chapter 3, verse 27, withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of your hand to do it. Don't say to your neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I'll give, when you have it by you. And that's strand is picked up again in chapter 11, verses 24 to 26. It's picked up in other places in the book of Proverbs, the desirability of a generous disposition. And this has to be imparted to our children. Natively, they're selfish and self-centered. And next to saying the word no without anyone having to teach them, probably the next word they learn is mine. No and mine, two words you never had to teach. How many of you had to teach your kids? Now say after me, no, no. I didn't have to teach my kids to say the word no. A lot of words I had to teach them to say, or they picked up as they heard them said in the home. But no and mine, just leap out of them. Leap out of them. Mine, no, mine. Our little granddaughter saying that to the puppy the other day. Because when she goes around and says, numma numma, when she's asking for a piece of banana or some other good snack food from her mother, the dog and she have grown up together, and the dog thinks he's her brother, and she thinks the same. And up till now, every time he comes along, he's got this sad little Shih Tzu look on his face, and he's never shown any jealousy, so they just have nothing but goodwill between each other. But she's been giving him half of everything. But the other day she decided, I don't need to do this. And she said, no, dog, mine, 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 my number, number, my number, number. So I said I was going to speak to you, not only from the perspective of a father whose nest was empty, but lo and behold, I see the same pattern in my grandchildren. We need to impart to our children the knowledge that an open hand and a generous spirit is that which they ought to cultivate, that which is to be desired, that towards which God has made special promises of His blessing. He warns of the danger of irresponsible suretyship. Co-signing for an unproven man or woman or friend, chapter 6, verses 1 to 5. The devastating effects of laziness, chapter 6, verses 6 and following, 12:24. The desirability of learning to love correction and reproof. Do I even dare to begin to cite the many verses in the book of Proverbs? He speaks of the fool who hates reproof. The wise who loves and welcomes reproof. Again and again admonishes his son. He speaks of the devastating effects of the abuse of alcohol. Chapter 20, verse 1. Chapter 23, 29 to the end. Chapter 31, 4 to 7. He speaks of the necessity of mastering one's spirit. 16:32, 25, 26. He whose spirit is without control is like a city and its walls broken down. This is just a sampling. You want to know what is the broad spectrum of the issues that ought to concern you as a parent in raising kids God's way? Take your clue from the contents of the book of Proverbs. Take your clue from the contents of the book of Proverbs, and you'll come to the conclusion that the concern of the father with his son is the whole of life in all of its responsibilities, pitfalls, dangers, and in every level of human relationship. Nothing less than the totality of life. And what it means with that bass note of the fear of God as the beginning of that chord of the kind of life that is well pleasing unto God and brings delight and blessing to the son or to the daughter. In that chord are all of these notes. And we under God have a responsibility in the rearing of our children to seek to reflect that broad spectrum.